It's time to awaken to your ultimate potential.
Always something to learn.
The more real and truthful you can get with yourself, the happier you're going to be.
Nothing happens in a comfort zone.
There are no set rules on how to attain success and to feel fulfilled.
Each one of us are born with a purpose.
For me, I knew there was something bigger.
You don't conquer the mountain, you conquer yourself.
I'm Crystal Bauer, wellness expert and entrepreneur. Each week, I'm speaking with incredible individuals, inspiring you to awaken your ultimate potential. Welcome to the Live Greatly podcast. I'm so excited to have Dr. John DeMartini as a guest today. He's a world-renowned specialist in human behavior, a researcher, author, and global educator. He's developed a series of solutions applicable across all markets, sectors, and age groups, spanning from corporate empowerment programs, financial empowerment strategies, self-development, relationship solutions, and social transformation programs. He's studied over 30,000 books across all the defined academic disciplines and has synthesized the wisdom of the ages, which he shares on stage in over 100 countries. He's shared the stage with some of the world's most influential people such as Sir Richard Branson, Steve Wozniak, Wayne Dyer, Deepak Chopra, and many more. From the thousands of testimonials he receives annually, Dr. DeMartini's work changes people's lives forever. This is going to be an incredible episode. Let's welcome Dr. John DeMartini.
So I'm so excited, Dr. DeMartini. Thanks so much for being my guest today.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's absolutely my pleasure. So you have such a variety of wisdom in so many different areas that I was trying to decide what I really wanted to focus on. But I think there are a couple different arenas that my audience could really benefit from and myself as well. But one of the things I wanted to start with is how can people really wake up to their passion and their purpose given the current climate? Because I've talked with a lot of different people who are really struggling right now with the pandemic, with job changes, with, you know, just life in general, I think is a challenge for a lot of people right now. And a lot of people have lost that spark. So I'm curious if you have any suggestions or tips on how people can awaken to that inner spark and excitement for life.
Okay. Well, we have control over our perceptions, decisions, and actions. That's it. So anytime you're pursuing something that's not one of those three things, you're running a probability of frustration. You don't have control over others. You don't have control over things around you. You have control over perceptions of what those are, your decisions, what to do with them, and the actions you take. So every human being has a set of priorities, a set of values, things that are most to least important in their life that are unique to them, that is evolving over time based on their experiences. And whenever they're doing things that are high on that value list, because the highest value is intrinsic and the lower values become more extrinsic, they are spontaneously inspired to act on the ones that are highest. Imagine a young boy who loves video games. He doesn't need to be motivated to do his video games, but he may need to be motivated to do his chores, his homework, and cleaning his room. So whatever is highest on our value, we are spontaneously inspired from within to do. So the question we want to ask, if we want to raise our vitality, raise our self-worth, raise our leadership capacity, emerge as an individual that has a yearning to want to go do something amazing, be enthused, inspired, and expanded, is to ask ourselves, what is the highest priority action we can do right now, this moment, that will help us fulfill what is most deeply important, meaningful, and inspiring to us, which we feel is our calling, our purpose, our métier, our mission? Because if we fill our day with things we can control that's the highest priority thing, we can automatically build momentum and energy. That's the motor side. On the sensory side of the brain, no matter what's happening in the world around us, it's not what's happening, it's how we interpret it. William James, the father of modern psychology, and Wilhelm Wundt, described that the greatest discovery of their generation is that human beings could alter their lives by altering their perceptions and attitudes of mind. So if we can ask the question, how specifically is whatever is happening in our life right now helping us fulfill what's highest in our value, what's most meaningful, what's most inspiring? And don't say it's not and run the victim story, but just ask, how specifically is what's happening helping? Mm-hmm. We will see how things become on the way, not in the way, and our energy will immediately surge back up. Anytime we can get up and link what we're doing to our highest values or prioritize what we're doing to our highest values, the blood glucose and oxygen goes into the forebrain and activates the medial prefrontal cortex, the executive center, and activates V5, V6 of the visual cortex and allows us to see inspired solutions, allows us to strategize how to go and get past our obstacles, how to execute them, and how to have self-governance. Mm-hmm. So by prioritizing our actions, by prioritizing our perceptions, by asking how is whatever's happening helping us get what's highest in priority, we immediately activate the creative centers that's solution-oriented, that's willing to embrace pain and pleasure in the pursuit of some great purpose, and it's our highest value that is our mission. Mm-hmm. Our mission and our purpose is always in the pathway of what's highest in our values at any time. So if we can link whatever we're doing to our highest value and take actions according to priority, we're gonna maximize our whatever's happening into opportunity. Because it is nothing to do with what's going on. Many people are depressed because they're comparing their current reality to a fantasy about how it used to be or a fantasy about how it could be, yeah, instead of actually what is and how will we use this to our greatest advantage. And that's a huge difference.
Yeah, that's incredible advice. And I think I'm reflecting kind of on my own journey. And what's interesting, I was practicing clinically for quite a while. And after a lot of self-reflection and taking time to really pay attention to what got me excited, I realized I really liked teaching. I really liked talking to larger groups and not so much the one-on-one. So I made a huge leap from clinical practice to starting my company and podcasting and all of that. But what's interesting now is it does not feel like work. You know, it really doesn't. And my kids will be like, are you going to work today? And it's funny because it's not work to me anymore. It's like a passion.
I was having dinner at a French restaurant in Sydney, Australia, across from the Four Seasons with a gentleman named Bill Pollack. Bill Pollack is the founder and owner of Drake International, okay, which has around 297,000 corporate clients. Mm-hmm. And he has been involved in business development. He started out in Ontario with a temporary service, hiring females to be temps for companies, but it became a full company consulting and advisory kind of company. Mm-hmm. And he started in 1951, and when we had dinner last time, he was almost 90s, in his 80s. And he said to me, he says, you know, last day I ever worked was in 1951 because wow, I found out what inspired me and I get to do it every day. Now I have a very intense schedule. I crank out a lot of stuff in a day. I love it. I have delegated everything in my life away. So the only thing I do is research and write and teach. And that's teaching one-on-one and consulting, or teaching one on many in podcasts, webinars, live things, or writing articles, or creating books, or doing movies, but it's just teaching. Everything else has been delegated. I don't do administrative work. I don't do marketing. I don't do cooking. I haven't driven in over 30 years. I don't even own a car anymore. I don't deal with that. I don't have, I don't even do domestic duty. I'm useless everywhere else, except teaching, researching, and writing. That's it. And traveling normally, but now on Zoom.
Right.
So when you're getting to do what you really love to do every day, you have frictionless expression of life. But when you're having to do things that you would love to delegate, but haven't yet been given yourself permission to give somebody the permission to help employment and give job opportunities by delegating and liberating yourself to extract surplus labor value out of their help, you're going to actually work harder, make less, pay more taxes, burden yourself. And that's designed that way to frustrate you enough to start living by priority and live efficiently. You know, the world is giving you feedback. Your physiology, psychology, sociology, theology, everything's trying to give you feedback to be authentic and live by the highest priorities and do the most meaningful thing in life. If you want a meaningful life, a fulfilling life, it's totally smacking you in the face every single day if you just look at it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think what took me so long to really make the change was I had that analytical part of my brain, like, well, I wasn't trained in business. I didn't go to business school. You know, there's that part that's like, could I really do this? And then the financial piece of, okay, I want to follow my passion, but then how do I make it, you know, how do I monetize? So I'm curious if you have any advice for people, because really what I ended up doing was I took the leap, you know, and I was like, I just got to believe that things are going to work out if I just take one step at a time and I follow that direction. And I think it's scary for a lot of people to do that. So wondering if you have any advice on that end.
Well, I could tell a funny story, but there's 7 questions that might be helpful.
Great.
Maybe the people can listen and they can write them down. You ask yourself, and I would type these things up and put them on your mirror in your bathroom. So when you're sitting on your throne, you're looking at it. But what you're doing is you ask yourself, what is it I would absolutely love to do in life? What is it I would absolutely love to do in life? And I wanted to travel the world and I wanted to teach. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to write and learn. So what is it I would absolutely love to do? And write it down. Doesn't matter about whether you think you can do it. Just what is it I would absolutely love to do? And I'm not talking about what you're infatuated with. What is it you're willing to embrace the pains and pleasures in and the pursuit of to do? Because that's really a sign you're really committed to it. If you're willing to embrace the pain and the pleasure, whatever it takes, not just something that's a whim, but something that's deeply meaningful to you. What is it I'd absolutely love to do? Number 2 is, how do I get handsomely paid to do it? Most people are thinking, how do I afford to do it? Never ask that question again in your life. That's a debt thinking. How do I get handsomely and beautifully paid to do it? How do I get handsomely and beautifully paid to advance my career? How do I get beautifully and handsomely paid to grow my business, start my business, add new clients? Always ask, how can I afford to, if you ask how you afford to do it, you go backwards. How do I get paid to do it? Mm-hmm. If you say, how do I get paid to do it? You'll get creative and come up with a solution. I had a gentleman the other day that wanted to start a business, but he thought, man, I've been going for 4 or 5 months now trying to raise capital and I can't seem to raise capital. He said, don't go raise capital from debt structures. Go raise capital from clients. Go to clients that want your service. Make sure you have something that's productive and meaningful to them that fills their needs. And they'll pay you in advance. And the amount you would be paying in the loan, why don't you just give them a slight discount and they'll be inspired by it. You got clients and you don't have to gamble and risk. Mm-hmm. And he goes, oh my God, never thought about that. I'm so used to thinking I got to go get in debt. Mm-hmm. So how do I get handsomely and beautifully paid to do it? The third one is, what are the highest priority actions I can do right now? Starting today, highest priority actions I can do to make that happen. That's amazing.
Yeah.
The fourth one is, what obstacles might I run into and how do I solve in advance? You know, you're meditating on the evils, as the Stoics say. What are the challenges that I might run into and how do I mitigate those challenges in advance? How do I either prevent them or if they come, how do I use them to my advantage? Mm-hmm. How can I spin them into opportunity? Because if you're prepared for it, you're not reactive. You just go next.
Yeah.
Then the next one is, what worked, what didn't work today? What worked, what didn't work today? So you stop and do an inventory. What worked, what didn't work? So you can put a list of those two. So you refine yourself as you go. Then the next one is, how can I do what I'm doing more effectively and efficiently tomorrow from what I just learned, what worked? How can I do it more effectively tomorrow? And the last one is, no matter what happened to me today, no matter what happened, how is it helping me get closer to my mission? My mission of service. And make sure that you don't project narcissistically, self-righteously onto the world and onto the marketplace what you think the world needs without checking and finding out what the world's really wanting. Because you're going to bang your head against the wall trying to project what you think the world needs. Go find out what the world's asking for. Go look on the search engine. Look what people are needing. And find something that overlaps, something that inspires you. So you have meaning getting up in the morning and tap dancing to work to give it to them. And they can't wait to get it because that's what they're looking for. And then figure out a way of making it more effective and efficient than the competitors. If you do that, you are not going to have a problem growing your entrepreneurial adventure. But if you follow those steps, I believe you can get handsomely paid to do it. And no matter what you do, no matter how much money you make, take a portion of it and stick it into first savings, build up a cushion, and then investments. And don't wait for extra money to invest. Invest first and you get extra money. Because when you manage money wisely, you get more money to manage. Mm-hmm. When you bring order to finances, the more wealth comes to you. But otherwise, entropy will bring unexpected bills to your company if you don't put your money aside first. I started saving in investments first, and I keep increasing those every quarter for 38 years. And that's enormous today. Wow. I'm very fortunate today because I paid myself first and I invested first. I didn't wait to see if there's going to be a profit. I took the profits off the top, and then I drew in the monies to make sure that manifested. And that's what I call demand creating a supply.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You know, I would love to hear about how you got into this. So from my understanding, you know, you struggled with learning a little bit growing up. And I would love to just have the audience understand, you know, what kind of what you realized and how you have gotten to this place of such empowerment.
I was born with my arm and leg turned in. I had a kind of a pigeon foot, pigeon arm deformity, and had to wear braces from age 1.5 to 4, kind of like a Forrest Gump braces. Mm-hmm. And that constrained me. And I think that made me want to be free. So I travel full time, most of the time. I also had a learning speech impediment. And from about age 1.5 to about 4, I also was going to a speech pathologist and putting strings and buttons in my mouth to try to learn how to use my muscles properly, because mm-hmm. I couldn't make the sounds properly. When I got to first grade, no matter what I did, I couldn't read. I went into normal reading, then remedial reading, and finally had to wear a dunce cap. They had a dunce cap in 1960. And the teacher asked my parents to come to the school. And I remember the teacher saying in front of my parents, "I'm afraid your son's not going to be able to read. He's not going to be able to write properly," because I write with my hand turned inward and backwards. And I spelled backwards with dyslexia. And said, "I don't think he's going to be able to read. He's not going to be able to write. He's not going to communicate very effectively. I don't think he's going to go very far or amount to much." But when I got out of this brace, I wanted to run. So he says, she says he wants to run everywhere, so put him into sports. So I did go into baseball, and I did pretty good there. And then I made it through school by asking the smartest kids what they learned from the classes. And I walked home the smartest girl, and I befriended the smartest boys and tried to learn from them and make them feel important by asking them, you know, what did they learn? And if they told me stuff, some of it would stick. And I passed elementary school that way until I was 12. And then my parents moved from Houston, Texas to Richmond, Texas, and there was no smart kids. We were in a very low socioeconomic area. A lot of gangs, a lot of social racial issues. And there was no kids to get help by, and so I ended up failing. And so I dropped out of school. I left home when I was 13.
Oh, wow.
I became a street kid. And I lived in the back of a big 24-hour bowling alley, and I lived in a diner, slept in a diner sometimes, in cars and parks. I mean, I was just a street kid. And when I was 14, I ended up hitchhiking out to California because surfing seemed like something I could do. And surf capital was not Texas. And I surfed in California at 14. I went down to Mexico and lived down there. At 15, I panhandled enough money to make it to Hawaii. I lived under a bridge there. Then I lived in a park bench. Then I lived in a bathroom. Then I lived in an abandoned car there. And I finally lived in a tent. And I was riding big waves on the north shore of Oahu. I even got into some surf magazines and surf movies and all kind of things. And I think I had a death wish because I was riding 40-foot waves sometimes. Then I nearly died at 17. And luckily, a lady found me in my tent, or I might not be here today. And she took me to a health food store. And at that health food store, leaving that health food store, I saw a little flyer on the door, and there was an announcement of a gentleman named Paul Bragg speaking at a little yoga class. And I never went to classes, but for some reason, intuition said, go listen to this guy. So I went there, and this one man in 1 hour with one message that one night really got to me. And what he said was so deeply meaningful and so inspiring that I thought, just maybe I don't have to be dumb. Maybe I can learn how to read, and maybe I could be intelligent someday. Mm-hmm. And that was a turning point. I saw a dream of me standing on a balcony, looking out in front of a million people speaking. That image, Andrew Tischler, famous painter from Melbourne, Australia, has painted, and it's in my office. It's a big painting in my office of me speaking in front of a million people. And I set out on a dream to overcome my learning problems and to try to return to school at age 18. And it was a rough start because I failed. But then with the help of my mom, I started reading a dictionary and memorizing 30 words a day and pronouncing them and spelling them, and until my vocabulary was strong enough to where I was able to pass school. And then I started to learn how to read, and I just never stopped. And I just became relentless in the reading, literally 18 to 20 hours a day. And now, all these years later, 48 years later, I've read over 30,500 books now, and I just read every day. And, you know, you can stand on the shoulders of a lot of people if you do that. And I love sharing whatever I've learned. And I've said to myself that I'll do whatever it takes, travel whatever distance, pay whatever price to give whatever I discover in these readings to share those around the world. And that's taken me now to 154 countries speaking, and now on Zoom, all the countries, yeah, and students in every country around the world. And we've reached billions of people now, not millions, but billions. And I'm really very inspired that if you stay with something, it doesn't matter where you start. It's just if you stay with something and build momentum with it and have some real calling to do it, there's nothing on the planet that has to interfere with what your dream is. Nothing. So you won't convince me you can't do something that's deeply meaningful. You'll never convince me of it because I know you can.
That's absolutely incredible. What an inspiration. And that makes it really clear to me why you're so good at what you're doing, because, you know, you have such a deep-seated, you know, why, I guess, for a better way of saying it, with what you went through. And I mean, how many children and people you've been able to inspire now is absolutely incredible. You know, I'm curious what tips you might have for kids or students who, and I've seen this in clinical practice because I was in integrative psychiatry for a while, but like they didn't see, some kids just don't seem to have a passion yet. Like they're not sure what it is. They're seeking. They don't have that motivation yet for really about something, except, you know, you mentioned video games. And that was something that I saw quite often where the parents would be like, oh, you know, my daughter or son, all they want to do is play video games. I can't get them to do this or do that. So I'm curious if you have any insights.
I'd love to. My son's got 31,000 followers on video games, so I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Please listen. This whoever's out there, get this. This is very important because I've had the opportunity to speak to a lot of kids. Mm-hmm. There is no such thing as a kid that doesn't want to learn. They just want to learn what's inspiring to them. And if they are subordinating to mothers, fathers, preachers, teachers, conventions, traditions, and mores around them, and they think they should be and have to be and got to be and must and need to be, and they're living in imperatives from outer authority injunctions, and they're being suppressed against what they really deeply want about, they're going to be unmotivated in life because they've shut down their intrinsic motivation, and now you're trying to push them uphill. If you find out what they're intrinsically inspired to do, regardless of what it is, and show them how they can link what they want to study in school to it, they'll take off. I got to share a story. This is a real story. It's amazing. In South Africa, I used to do little talks sometimes, activating your genius and potential. And teachers would come and parents would bring their kids there. And sometimes principals would come and we'd sometimes hundreds and hundreds of people there. Well, that opened up doorways to go into the schools to try to help the inspire the kids. Well, the Board of Education got a hold of it, and they asked me to come and do a series of programs called Teaching Today for Tomorrow. So what we did is we went into this Alexander Township. Now, townships in South Africa, the average income could be anywhere from $300 to $600 a year. They've got families of 5 to 7 kids, some of them. They're living in shacks. The schools don't have a whole lot. Sometimes they don't even have floors or books. It's not the highest socioeconomic. And the matric pass rate at this one place was 27%. 27 out of 100 kids finished high school. They finished their test, could pass it. So we went into this school, and I did a presentation first to the principals of the region, because there's a bunch of schools in the region. One of them asked me to come into Alexandria Township and speak to the high school there. I had about 800 students at the high school. It was not the, it wasn't like you would see something in America. You know, it wasn't that kind of standard. And I did a presentation that inspired them. Then what I did a 4-hour value assessment and linking process for the teachers. And this was a week before they started school. And I had them identify what their hierarchy of values are. On my website, drdmartini.com, I've got a value determination process, which is a very objective system that I've been using 43 years. And it's really powerful. It's complimentary and free. Please, whoever's out there, take a look at it and do it and be honest about the answers. Don't write BS. Yeah. And I had them go through and identify this. It took about 45 minutes. I then went in there and took the job, the actual curriculum that they were teaching, 5 or 6 courses they were each teaching. And I asked, how specifically is teaching this topic and the subtopics of this class helping you fulfill what's meaningful to you? Because if you can't see it, you're not going to be engaged. You're not going to be inspired. You're not going to want to share it. You're not going to want to research it. You're not going to want to be a really enthused teacher. And you're going to create a Pygmalion effect and basically project onto a boring experience. And they're going to associate with learning. And they're going to feel trapped having to do it. And that's not fair to the kids. So let's find out how these classes are going to serve you. And we linked for 3.5 hours, almost three, just under 3.5 hours, until these teachers were inspired by what they were getting to do. Instead of having to teach it because the board said so, they were teaching it because now they could see they would win. So I increased their engagement. I got them inspired to want to share. Then on the actual day of the first class when school got started, they don't do much. It's kind of an intro day. Orientation day. And I did the same thing for the students. I found out what their values are. I got copies of that. I gave it to the teacher to memorize. So they knew everyone in their class's value system. So they would respect and communicate those values. I then linked each of the classes they were going to take to their values. And that was a 4-hour session. So we did a 4-hour session with the teachers, 4-hour session with the students. Then we came back about 3 months later, and we did a linking between the teacher's values and the student's values. Because if the teacher doesn't honor the student's values, they're going to talk down to them with autocracy and a dictator model. And the kids are not going to feel respected, and they're going to be rebelling, and they're going to end up with the defiant disorders and attention deficit because they're not respected. But I found out the teachers then connected the values of the students to the teacher. And then the students got to find out the values of the teacher back to them and how they win out of it, how both win out of being with each other. We did that. So 4 sessions, once with the principals, then the 3 with the students and teachers. And we did that over that few months. 1 year later, I came back and just did a rally to the students. There was about 900 there. It was absolutely inspiring. I got a video of it and audio recording of it. It's absolutely inspiring. 99, not 20, probably 97, not 27, 97% of the kids passed matric that year.
Wow.
97. The Board of Education, they gave me a sheet, you know, kind of an award thing. It says phenomenal. Because the kids want to learn, but they want to learn what's meaningful to them. And if it's video games or if it's modeling or if it's running a business or if it's playing sports or soccer or whatever it is, they got to see how those classes help them do it. I don't think a student deserves to be sitting in a class that they can't see how that class is going to help them do what their dream is, or they're not going to be engaged. So I believe that every teacher has the responsibility to be able to get to know that student's values, what's really important to that child, regardless if it's going to change or not, doesn't matter. It can change, link it again. But once they see how it's engaged and they can not disrespect that and say, oh, you don't want to do that. You need to do this. You need to be a doctor, like an Indian or something like that. You have to be a doctor or an engineer or lawyer. That just destroys some inspiration. So what happens is, and we need everybody. Everybody's needed out there, not just engineers. So once they see the connection, they can't wait to go to class. because they're getting their dreams made. I had a boy there who was 16 years old that wanted to climb Mount Everest. That's all he cared about doing is climbing Mount Everest. So I linked every one of his classes to climbing Mount Everest.
Yeah, it's so smart. That's absolutely
incredible. I got the chemist there to teach him about partial, you know, pressures and oxygen in the thing, and about CO2 levels, and about the chemistry of being at high altitudes. I got the person in sociology to teach him, you know, the social custom of Nepal and Tibet. And I got the people in language to teach them the language of Tibet in addition to Afrikaans in South Africa. And I got him also, then he was now, instead of going, oh, I got to do what these teachers said, the teachers are working for me to get me my dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, what you're doing is so incredibly valuable, and it totally can change the educational system. I mean, from what you just described there, it makes total sense. And I, from my own personal experiences, you know, the rotations that I had to do from PA school where I was interested, I was all in. The ones where I was like, oh, I didn't really like surgery, it was like a chore. You know, you're kind of, So it makes total sense that if you can really direct people's learnings to what they're passionate about, that people will, and kids
will. Well, the thing is, whatever's highest on your value, you spontaneously, the pulvinar nuclei in the thalamus, the subcortical thalamus, the diencephalon, is a gating filtering mechanism of all sensory perception. And so what happens, whatever your highest value is, you're sensing out of the environment. If you're, let's say you're 35 years old, you got three kids, they're under the age of five, your whole focus is kids. Your mom, you're dedicated to that, your identity revolves around that, your ontological perception of yourself is, I'm a mother. You love it. You walk in a mall, you're going to see children's clothes, children's entertainment, children's education, children's health items, children's anything to do with children, you're going to notice it. But let's say your husband, who's maybe an entrepreneur and wants to run a business and pay for all of this, he's going to walk in the mall. He's not going to see children's clothes. He's not going to see children's items. He's going to see computers. He's going to see suits. He's going to see anything that's going to give him an advantage to get ahead business-wise. He's going to see what companies are busy and they're buying stock in it. So we filter our reality according to what we value most. And children have attention surplus disorder, not attention deficit disorder, in the area of their highest values, but have attention deficit disorder in the area of their lowest. And they're automatically disengaged and they don't want to do it. And they it's going to go into short-term memory at best. And they're just going to pass a test and they're not going to care. And that's not how learning is about. Learning is about finding out what you absolutely are curious and inspired to want to learn and fill your brain with it. You can get it. I can take anything. I've been tested. I've been challenged. I can take anything and I can make you inspired to read it and learn it. I can make the links and all of a sudden make you engaged. And I've proven it and done it over and over again. And people go, I can't believe it. Now my daughter's wanting to study chemistry and she wants to ride horses. All I had to do is show them the relationship between chemistry and horses. And where it's going to give her a competitive advantage. And once she understands the chemistry of digestion and food and health and how they're going to help the horses and hair structure and collagen and I taught her all about the chemistry of the horse. Man, she wants to study chemistry.
Wow.
Anything to anything. You can take anything that's disengaged and make it engage if you ask the right question. Because the quality of your life is based on the quality of the questions you ask.
Yeah, that's wonderful, wonderful insights. I would love just briefly to get your thoughts on social media, because that's another piece where I think a lot of people get sucked into just not being fully present and, you know, scrolling, and people can waste hours on there and without real productivity. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on social media.
Well, social media is not good or bad. It's neutral.
Yeah.
It's how you use it. Social media is just a technology that you can use. It can be used brilliantly and you can do amazing things with it. I mean, I reach millions of people doing that. I've got podcast after podcast today. So that's it's a great thing. But if you let it run your life and you don't take command of priorities, if you don't fill your day with high priority actions that inspire you, it's going to fill up with low priority distractions that don't. And then you're going to end up living subordinated to what other people think and do instead of what it is that inspires you intrinsically. And so social media, if it's used wisely, can empower you. If it's not, it can distract you and in a sense make you compare your life to other people instead of compare your daily actions to your own dreams. And as long as we put people on pedestals, we're going to put them up on a pedestal. We're going to minimize ourselves. We're going to inject their values to our life. We're going to try to live in their values, which is futility. It's like a cat trying to swim like a fish and beating itself up going, why am I, what's wrong with me? You're going to think you're sabotaging your life because you're comparing yourself to the Kardashians. I mean, give me a break. Their life is not better than yours. It's just different. But you sometimes live in a fantasy of the red carpet fantasy instead of actually get grounded and look at where you have it. Whatever you see in others, you have inside in your own capacity, in your own values. Give yourself permission to shine, not shrink. And don't look down on people and waste time on trying to get people to live in your values. It's futile. If you look down on people and try to get them to live in your values, you're not getting anywhere. Try it in relationships, not going to work. And if you minimize yourself and try to live in their values, not going to work. But if you learn to do something extraordinary with your life and let them do what they love doing, and then share those inspirations together, you go places in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this has been wonderful. So what I think would make sense for everybody to do is to go on your website and take, it was a value assessment, right?
Value determine your values, drdmartini.com. I promise you that is worth doing because it's an eye opener to look at what your life demonstrates. If you ask people, what are your values? They're going to tell you a bunch of social idealisms, honesty and truth and peace. Bull. I want to know what your life demonstrates. Mm-hmm. People say, I want to be financially independent. Yeah, but you're spending all your money on consumables that depreciate in value and you're not saving and investing in assets. So, bull, BS. What does your life demonstrate? Not what your fantasies are. That's when you start to get grounded. That's when you can start to prioritize your life appropriately. So do the exercise.
Yeah, so I think, you know, some tangible steps for the audience and then we'll kind of come to a close. I think, you know, go on there and do that. And then when people have a clear idea about their values, you know, is that the time then to kind of look at all the different tasks that you're doing throughout the day and kind of prioritize what's most productive, what aligns with your values, what's financially successful, you know, then delegate. I guess that maybe you could.
If you're not filling your day with things that inspire you and delegating the things that don't, you're trapped. Mm-hmm. That simple. You don't want to spend your life doing low priority things or you devalue yourself. Every time you do a low priority action and a low value action, you devalue you. And there's somebody out there that would love to do that, that's high on their values. So you can inspire them and inspire you if you manage your life by priority. It's really that simple. It's not rocket science. But so many people are afraid to do it. They're afraid to let go of stuff and give people the opportunity to do something. Or they think, well, I'm going to save money and buy somebody that's cheaper. No, find the person that would love to do the thing you want to delegate and go and do the thing that can serve the most people, that really meets people's needs, that inspires you. And wow, you got a big difference. And there is a difference. Pardon me for using a different language here. But if you study the etymologies of passion, I don't know if you ever looked it up, but it comes from pati, passio. It means to suffer. I don't use the word passion. It means to suffer. Compassion means to suffer with somebody. I have no interest in getting compassionate or passionate with people. I'm inspired by a mission. There's a difference between a passion and a mission. A mission is inspired from within by your highest value. A passion is a byproduct of unfulfilled highest values. The seven deadly sins were the passions. Go look up the passion. It means to suffer. So I'm not promoting the passion. I'm promoting finding your mission. The one thing that inspires you, as Gary Keller says, the one thing that inspires you that you can't wait to get up in the morning and be and do and have.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to need to change the way that I...
Look up the etymology of that. You'll be surprised on it. I'm an etymologist, so I go and look at the origins of these languages, and I studied exegesis and comparative religions and philosophies. And so language means something. And people are going around since 1985, since the Passion for Excellence came out, people started making that the lexicon without even knowing what it means. Mm-hmm. But it means to suffer. And compassion means to suffer with somebody. I am not promoting suffering. It's not necessary. It's optional. It's because of perception. Suffering comes from trying to live in other people's values or trying to get others to live in your values and not appreciating the magnificence of life.
Right. I'd rather live an inspired life in
life. Yeah. I'm more about inspired life. I don't live in passion. I'm on an inspired mission. I've got 48 years to demonstrate it. Passion is transient at best. A mission is eternal for life.
Well, you're doing absolutely incredible things. Everybody can check out, you know, you have a podcast as well, and you can check out his website. Anything else you want to share with the audience before we come to a close?
Well, thank you for this. This is great. You're inspired by what you do. I wouldn't call you passionate. I'd call you inspired. But doing something you love every day is the key. So you got to give yourself permission to shine, not shrink. Mm-hmm. And don't subordinate and live in the shadows of anyone. You're not here to put people on pedestals or pits. Put them in your heart. Get in a state of love. Do something you love on a daily basis and delegate the rest away and learn how to do that. And that's going to require that you do something that really serves somebody, not maybe, but really serves somebody. And the way you know it is you got to demand for your supply And you're doing it with sustainable fair exchange. Don't narcissistically project onto them what they need and then not have anybody interested. And don't altruistically sacrifice a profit thinking that that's going to get you anywhere. But do a sustainable fair exchange in a state of equity and equanimity, and you will fly with opportunities as an entrepreneur and in life. And then you can delegate. You'll have plenty of money to delegate all the things you want. And then you'll delegate it to people that love doing it, and you'll make even more. And you'll be rewarded prosperously for being authentic. That's the path.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much. This was absolutely incredible. And I'm sure everyone listening is going to get quite a bit out of it. So thanks again for being my guest today. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Live Greatly podcast today. You can learn more about me and Live Greatly at www.livegreatly.co. Make sure to check out my Instagram page at livegreatly_co. And please subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review if you enjoyed it. Share it with your friends and family. And until next time, this is Crystal Bauer with Live Greatly, inspiring you to awaken your ultimate potential.